With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Music Nomad, our favorite guitar maintenance tool manufacturing masters. You should check them out on musicnomadcare.com or on social media with @musicnomadcare. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Fidelity Guitars' Matt Oram.
Hello, Joe.
Hello there. Yes, welcome. Welcome, dear listener. We've got Matt back. It's been a while since we've had Matt on the podcast. I don't know, 2 years? A year and a half?
Yeah, I've got a feeling it was sort of early pandemic, sort of first lockdown.
Yes, yes, exactly. I was doing much more like having guests on the podcast, which I haven't really done this year as much. But I wanted to start doing it again because it makes it more interesting. Also, I don't know where Jay's gone. He has gone. He is the busiest.
He's just
man.
Running. He's running, man.
Yeah, clearly. Clearly. At the start of the year, he was like, "I'm going to take a couple of weeks off." At the start, I was like, "Yeah, cool, man, no problem." I haven't heard from him since.
That's the end.
That was
blocked.
But yes, and Matt's away somewhere on holiday. Matt's back next week. He was supposed to be here today, but let us down last minute. But that's okay. That doesn't matter because all I really wanted was you, Matt.
Oh, he's very sweet of you. Yes. Feelings mutual.
Exactly. As it should be. But yes, dear listener, welcome to another episode. I am still completely obsessed with mid-80s British meat adverts. Have you seen any of these, Matt?
I caught a bit of this from last week, yeah.
Yeah, this, absolutely. The pork advert might be my favourite thing in the world. Dear listener, you have to go and check it out. If you haven't, if you weren't on the Facebook group, Guitar Nerds group on Facebook where I posted the advert, then I'll put it in the description of this podcast. You need to watch these things. They are absolutely...
Clearly didn't work. I mean, it is catchy, but... As a vegan, clearly it didn't.
Well, yes, yeah.
It missed the mark.
Came out in 1984, so I was, you know, 6 months
Your
old.
Your mind
whatever,
was still susceptible.
But still.
Something stuck in there.
Yeah, But nonetheless, a fantastic ad. Dear listener, go check it out just to see this wonderfully creepy man stood round a table with his neighbours and his family and saying things like, "My wife's got what it takes. Fred's got plenty. Arthur's got plenty. We've all got plenty. Plenty to go around. There's good taste in British pork." He says things like that, and it's wonderful. Do go and watch it.
He's living his best life. Sounds like he's having a good time.
Yeah, yeah.
He made his meat.
Yes.
Exactly. And a lovely wife.
You only see her, the whole advert, he's talking about his wife's cooking. You see her for a split second in the 30-second advert. It's very weird.
Seems like attitudes of the time.
A product of 1984 in Great Britain. Yes, I'm afraid it was. But dear listener, do go and check it out. This week, before we get on to talking about, you know, about you, Matt, and Fidelity Guitars and guitars in general. I wanted to talk about a little bit about Neural DSP, because we've been, so they've been advertising on the podcast for a little while. They're doing like a 30% off of all of their plugins with discount code Guitar Nerds, but they don't do it with any of their new releases. And just when we started working with them, they released the Tone King Imperial Mark II plugin. But now it's been long enough that they were like, oh yeah, we'll put that in the 30% off as well. And dear listener, I thoroughly recommend checking it out. So you do get like 14 days free with, you know, whatever, no credit card required. So you can just go and download the plugin and try it out, because it's better than anything else. As far as I'm concerned, it's better than anything else they've ever done. Admittedly, that's because it's way more my speed, because it's not, you know, like a metal amp or anything. But it's the best sounding guitar plugin I've ever heard. It's so good that earlier on when I was messing around with it, my partner Emma came in and was like, that sounds amazing. What are you playing? Like, you know, thinking
who's
that
playing?
I was like, thank you. My guitar skills are fantastic. Are you enjoying this D major? But
that's really cool. Like, I didn't know they did Tone King stuff, because I've got a Tone King Falcon sat behind me in here, which is like a real world one, which is banging. That sounds great. So to have the plugin of that would be infinitely simpler than trying to mic it up.
Yes, the Tone King Falcon is the amp that appears in an awful lot of the pictures that you upload of Fidelity guitars.
Yeah, it's a pretty one.
It's a pretty one. So, how did you import? Because they're not that available over here. They've been available.
It was an eBay one. I've had it for years now. It must be about 8 years, something like that. I remember I bought it from a guy, and he insisted on meeting me in a car park of a South London tube station or train station at like midnight.
Wow.
Just sure I was going to get abducted or stabbed, but he turned up in a really nice Beamer. I think he was just working late.
it's an expensive amp. I'm not surprised he was in a nice car. It's a £2,000 amplifier, or there and thereabouts. It goes for a little bit less. So.
Yeah, I think I got for like £800. So
what?
A bit of a steal, yeah. Like I said, it is a bit rattly, so maybe that was it. Maybe it's got something. My one's not quite right, but it doesn't really matter. That's fine. All little amps like that are a bit rattly.
Yeah, for sure. Dear listener, if you've not checked out a Tonkin Falcon, they are fantastic. They look they're very much a TV-esque amplifier, so you've got the controls, you know, down one side of the front panel, just like an old TV, and a lovely grill. Is it, what did you get yours in? Is yours blue? It's not the brown one, is
no
it?
It's like black Tolex with the sort of white, so I'm just looking at sort of the silvery gray sparkle grill on it, and the white, black and white Tolex. So yeah, it's banging. It's the knobs are like old cooker knobs as well, so they're really clicky. So like clicks between settings
in
a really
round.
Yeah, because it's got one control on it that switches between, I'm just going to look at it again, was it rhythm, lead, and something else, I can't see it from here, but it's got like three different voicings effectively, and yeah, it clicks in a really satisfying way between them.
That is,
and the same with the attenuator on the back as well. It's got like eight different attenuation settings.
That's very cool indeed, because it's super simple controls, right? You've just got like volume, master,
yeah,
tone,
volume, tone, and then these kind of the voicings and the attenuator, and that's kind of it. And it's just a little speaker, but it sounds really good. I built in one of those. I put in one of those integral mics. Did you ever come across those?
Yes, I did see those for a bit. Actually, Ashdown messed around with trying to get those on some stuff recently, but we're never quite happy with the results.
Yeah, I think just for chucking like demos and stuff down, it's really handy, just effectively to, you're kind of building in a DI, sort of building in a mic into the right in front of the speaker. It sounds, yeah, it's not the best sounding thing in the world, but just to get a sound out of an amp into a computer really easily when it doesn't have any other kind of out on it, then yeah, I found them really good.
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
That's actually a really good idea. It's kind of that's a really good method that I don't think me or Matt ever really talk about on the podcast, because we tend to be so like plug-in minded or preampy and stuff like that. But that's an excellent way to get the most out of a real world amplifier in, you know, without having all the setup time involved in miking up an amplifier each time.
Yeah, either that or something like a two-note torpedo, which you use as well. So you just bypass the speaker completely and run it straight in, but then you lose sort of the stuff in the room if you're trying to sort of play with the speaker and that a bit. But
yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's kind of the upside of the two notes is convenience. The downside is I find they sound nothing like... It's the amp sounds nothing like the amp once you put the two notes.
Yeah, you're still going to have to do a ton of stuff in the box, but that's kind of that's the way, isn't it?
Yeah, of course, exactly. It's still like a great solution. It's just a different solution from what the actual amp is.
Yeah, exactly. Back on your Neural thing, I bought that, the Corey Wong plugins, on your recommendation, actually, and that's great. You? We've got that set up as sort of the default thing on the door now. Just you can get a lot out of that.
Yeah, well, that answered my question. I was going to ask if the Tone King, you know, with the Integral mic, was your sort of go-to for like home recording bits and bobs.
Yeah, like two channels into... I'm fully branded up. I've got all the Neural stuff focused right as well. I've been clearly a long-time listener. Two channels into Focusrite 4i4, I think I've got here, and then one of them being the Integral, and then the other one is the Torpedo. And then kind of just find a nice mix between those with some plugins and stuff.
Oh, that's very cool. Yeah, that Corey Wong is, until this Tone King plugin came out, that Corey Wong was everything. It's every jingle on Guitar Nerds is Corey Wong. Like every track that I build is always that. And to be honest, because I tend to use, like, I actually still use real world effects. So I just use the default amp normally on the Corey Wong, which kind of, I always forget to turn the compression off. Because it had, like, I think the default has like a touch of reverb on it, and it's quite clean, touch of reverb and the compressor on. And I'm always with drives, I'm like, why isn't this sound dynamic? So and then I realize that I've got the compressor left on the Corey one. But having played all of the Neural DSPs, plugins, admittedly, dear listener, because I'm never ever doing anything like super heavy, a lot of them are less appealing to me, but I thought the Pliny one would be the thing that I'd like the most, but the Corey Wong just
works, doesn't it?
It just works, and it's just like
that and a couple of Abbey Road things thrown on for reverbs and delay shenanigans. Oh, yes. And yeah.
Yes. Good to go. I've got some good Abbey Road plugins. They're reverb rooms and stuff.
That's
like that.
The one. I've got that.
That's very good. It crashes my DAW all the time. But
you need a better computer, right?
Yeah, yes, I know. Damn you, Mac. but yes, the Corey one was my favorite right up until this Tone King's come out. It's really, really good. I'm actually, dear listener, I'm going to do something I don't normally do. I'm going to play you a sound sample of what I recorded earlier. Matt, you won't obviously be able to hear this, as I'm going to add it on afterwards, but I'll play that shortly. But before I do, I just want to talk you through the plugin, because unlike a lot of the Neural DSP plugins, you do essentially just have the one amplifier. Unlike The normal plugins, you can access the front or the back of the amp, so you can affect the attenuator. And there's like a there's an HF comp switch, which compensates the highs lost when the attenuator is activated. So they've emulated even that. But of course, you have all the controls accessible on the front of the amp. And then they have actually a really comprehensive selection of pedals included in the plugin as well. They've got a compressor, which is better than the compressor on the Cory Wong, mainly because it has a blend, which is actually super useful. And then it's just compression and volume, and you have a switch between fast and slow, which is great because it's way more vibey and old school. But because of that blend, you can still bring it in subtly without it getting too squishy. And then it's two overdrive pedals with very, very different voicings. One's kind of, I guess, more screamery, and one's a bit thicker, a bit more full on, but with a nice bass cut included. And then they have a chorus, which is the most subtle chorus I've ever heard. You know how chorus can sound like... chorus is a bit cheesy and tacky. This is more what people thought chorus should be when they designed it, when they were like, oh, well, you know, it's supposed to sort of be like there's another guitar playing with you. That's kind of what this does. It's very, very subtle, but very good. And again, it has a blend, which makes it very usable. And then a delay and a reverb, but... there's also reverb on the amplifier, you know, so you can get really crazy with that, and you can create some. There's also, I should mention, there's obviously tremolo available on the amp as well. So there's so much you can do. The delay is all warm and Bucket Brigade-y. You can get some great vintage slapback, as well as being able to do some really soundscapey ambient things. Obviously, I downloaded this today, so I'm at like maximum, you know, this is the right time for me to be talking about this plugin and thinking that it's really good, because I've spent half a day on it. But it's really good. Matt, I recommend it, you know, getting the at least try the 14-day trial. I can't see me ever needing another plugin. Like, it kind of has all the effects that I would use.
I like the sentiment, you're a big liar, but
I've got to throw one of those in every now and again. but it is really good, dear listener, do check it out. Anyway, here's a little thing I made earlier. There we go. There it was. For Matt, he just heard me go silent for a second.
That was beautiful. I didn't hear it, but I don't need to. Speaking of the chorus stuff, I was at, we were chatting before we started, I was at a festival down Brixton at the weekend. There was a band on, I heard, and I don't know where they're from, but they're called Unschooling. And it was a five-piece, and it was basically three guitars and then bass and drums, but the three guitars were sort of two, I think it was like an Esquire and then a Melody Maker, so just bridge pickups, and then a 12-string as the third guitar, and then the two sort of six-string guitars both just had buckets of chorus on them, and it was great.
it sounded really good.
Yeah, it was really mathy. It was kind of like fiddly, kind of like first album Foals, kind of Devo sort of lines. and kind of a bit of a Maccabees vibe without sort of the less sort of poppy tunes, a bit more mathy than that. But yeah, they're really good. Just check them out. But yeah,
I'm of chorus on everything. Now. Yeah, that's what I want. Yeah, I can kind of see. I'm looking at a few photos of them, and some of these I can see their pedal boards on the floor, and I think I can see the bass player's got a little dimension chorus, a little boss dimension chorus going on.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. Probably got chorus on the drums as well.
Weirdly, the bass player's got a set of Ernie Ball power slinkies just on the floor next to his pedal board. I don't like that. You're not going to be able to just. I mean, that's definitely more convenient.
Yeah, if you snap a bass string, just go home. He's clearly not meant to be, is it?
Exactly. Yes. Wow. These guys are cool. I will check them out. How was that? So that festival was called?
Wide Awake Festival. So it's, I think, right, in saying that it's the guys that run the Brixton Windmill, started it up a few years ago. I might be wrong. But basically all the stages are sponsored by the sort of the small London venues. There was one that was co-sponsored by Moth Club with DIY Magazine and stuff like that. It was great. It was a really good lineup. The headliners were Primal Scream doing Screamadelica in full, which was amazing, especially getting to that point in the night and been drinking for quite a long time. It was pretty messy. But then, yeah, a few sort of newer bands like Yard Act were really good. Sort of band from Leeds sort of with sort of kitchen sink kind of stories with just some really angular guitar stuff. I think the guy it looked like an Esquire, but it wasn't quite an Esquire that he was playing. It had sort of a blacked out neck pickup. You know, the kind of style of playing where it's messy on purpose, but you actually have to be really good to pull it off.
Yeah.
In a kind of convincing way. It was a bit like that.
Right. Yeah. That sounds like the sort of guitar player that I wish I was. I think I actually am too. Just a messy.
Just a mess.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. The Horrors were there as well. So Horrors aren't playing out that often anymore, but they had a shorter set because they had some tech difficulties, but that was really nice to see Josh out with that good guitar that I made from back in 2018, maybe something like that. It's just getting on a bit now, that one, but
yeah,
played
great.
That for most of the set, and it's funny because it's got like a Filtertron in it and a gold foil with a mastery trem, and the new stuff off the EP that he was playing it on is basically the guitar tone is like ultra new metal, like it's a really heavy new metal tone.
That's the guitar for that.
Yeah, clearly it sounded great, but you wouldn't have. It's not the one you would have gone for, but
so that's the Fidelity signature model that you made for him, which was it. Was it a JB that? No,
it's a JB double, shape.
It is a JB.
Yeah, because it was based on an SG that he had, like a catalog or just like cheapo SG that had a maple neck. So that was one of his first guitars that he just loved the sound of. But just didn't play very well. So he wanted something kind of inspired by that. And then the Filtertron comes from sort of the Cramps. So he's a big Cramps fan. That's sort of his first touch point in terms of what guitar sounds they were trying to get on the first album in particular. And then the gold foil for like the more washy kind of synth stuff.
Yeah, of course. Do I remember correctly? Didn't you match the red to some lipstick that he provided?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Ruby Woo? There's still a few photos knocking about that pop up on my Google Photos every now and again, sort of memories. Me looking in the mirror, badly applied like lipstick, trying to hold up a guitar next to it to see if I've got it quite close enough.
Have you made many modifications on that guitar since it went out to him?
No, I did a few bits after a couple of years, just sort of tweaking the bridge saddles and stuff. It could do with the new sort of trem that I'm using now, so taking off that. The mastery is really good, but with my bridge, it needs the roller bar that I was using for the first couple of years to get the right break angle and keep everything sort of settled down and return to pitch. Okay, so now I've swapped that out and using the Descendant from Chris Swope instead, which is ace. I know you've talked about it a bit on the podcast before, but just having the ball ends of the string sort of drop below the surface of the guitar, it just lets you get a much better angle over, especially over the bridges I'm using, where it's kind of a variation on a Tele bridge, where you don't have the same kind of height as a Gibson or Gretsch or something like that. Just helps sort of get a good setup on it, and it just feels really nice to use as well.
That's definitely a cool modification. I feel like that's kind of been a thing for you throughout sort of Fidelity's lifespan is you're constantly trying to think of ways to improve them, even though they're, you know, cracking guitars as they are. You seem to always be fine-tuning things.
Yeah, I think it'd be daft not to. There's always, I'm still so like early into this. It's still only like 5.5 years since sort of launching the business, and prior to that, it was only sort of a handful of prototype ones. So, in terms of spec, and also in terms of process, how they're made, still learning a lot on every guitar I make. It's sort of, there's how many are out there now? About 130, 140, something like that. Wow. So if you, each one is sort of a percentage or so increment improvement on the the previous one, just in terms of craft and the thing the machine's got in the shop, and then like you say, yeah, spec and hardware and stuff like that. It's getting to the point now where it's getting serious. I've become an importer. I've got like 50 or so Gotto tuner sets coming in. I've got tons of celluloid on the way from China. So it's all these things you can do once you get to a certain point where you can like getting loads of sort of bigger volumes of custom hardware made and that kind of thing that you just can't do when you start out. So of definitely course. Helps.
Yeah, 140 sounds like a lot.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like enough to me. I feel like I always aim for. I feel like I've been aiming for 50 a year for the last sort of couple of years and ended up more around sort of 30 something. I think this year will be the first one to sort of hit 50.
Right.
Because it got a good sort of 20 out of the way right at the start of the year that would sort of started building last year. So it shouldn't be too much of a stretch to get another 30 out before the year's gone. There's 17 sort of on the workbench at the moment. They're just going into assembly now, and then another sort of batch of 20 something behind that. So.
Wow. And we'll how see. Many how do they break down between how many of them are the lights as opposed to the sort of full customs? Are you still seeing like light being incredibly popular?
It's about 50-50, something really? Like that. Yeah, I think a lot of people sort of go to the site for the light stuff, and then I know how it feels as a fellow guitar nerd. You sort of you look at the stuff you can afford, and then you talk yourself into the next tier up. So I think that's how some of the people sort of arrive at that point. But yeah, it's about half and half, and which is great. I'm really glad to still be able to sort of offer something at the price point that people kind of can get something from me without having to drift in sort of $2,000 or $3,000. I've kind of positioned it now. They're going up in price a little bit, but for the light twos, I think it's going to be about £1,600 including VAT in the UK, so a bit less than that internationally. But that, for me, that's the price of an American telly, and I kind of want to be in that conversation. If you're thinking about getting a telly, then when you think about this instead is kind of where I'm putting it, which sounds, on the one hand, sounds incredibly sensible, and on the other hand, it sounds incredibly stupid if you consider that that's being made by one guy in a small workshop and not in the Fender factory where it's a lot cheaper to do it. But there you go. Yeah. That's kind of where my head's at.
Yes, there is that. iZotope and Native Instruments have teamed up to create the start-to-finish bundle that home recording guitar nerds have been waiting for. Plus, you, dear listener, get an extra 10% off with Guitar Nerds by using discount code NERDS10 at the checkout on iZotope.com. From the creative spark to the final touch, their new bundles include pretty much everything you could possibly need, which is great because it's far too easy to sink hundreds of pounds and a big chunk of your time into just picking up random plugins. The Music Production Suite 4.1 and Complete 13 bundle contains over 30 intelligent mixing, mastering and repair plugins, 65 premium instruments, 20 plus expansions and over 35,000 sounds. And if that's a bit basic for you, they've also bundled Music Production Suite 4.1 with Complete 13 Ultimate, which gives you everything that makes Complete 13 incredible, plus a colossal library of added synths, sampled instruments and effects, 115 plus premium instruments and effects, 39 Native Instruments expansions and over 65,000 sounds. Whew. It sounds like a lot. It is. It's very good, very comprehensive. And as we've come to expect from iZotope, it's very good value. If you're looking to get into home recording, I cannot recommend it more highly. And if you're already into home recording, it really is the one-stop shop for making what you do sound better. This podcast is entirely treated and produced using iZotope plugins, and Native Instruments have been responsible for almost every synth or sample you've heard on our Guitar Nerds jingles.
Check out their great new bundles on isotope.com or follow links in the description of this podcast and use discount code NERDS10 at the checkout for 10% off anything in the Isotope arsenal.
But I guess the last time you came on the podcast, you just launched Light. I mean, I think we spent the bulk of the podcast talking about how remarkable it was. And I guess, you know, how dangerous it was for you to workload-wise to position a custom-built guitar at the price you did for the Light. So the idea with the Fidelity Light, dear listener, if you're not familiar, I'll be very brief. I appreciate it. I've spoken about Fidelity a bunch, so a lot of people probably know. But the Light is one of the three main body shapes that Fidelity do, with a single pickup. And it's like a swimming pool routing, right? So you can have one of three positions, and then you have like limited color options, and the neck is different hardware, isn't it? It's not your own hardware.
Yeah, that's changing this year. So part of the reason the price is going up, partly because everything's very expensive at the moment, also because the spec's changing a little bit. So the lights are going to have the proper custom bridge and the sort of the modified saddles. And the through string with the brass velvet block that the premium stuff has from, it was supposed to be this month onward, it's going to be next month onward.
Oh, wow.
Now, just to try and bring everything a bit more into line, because it made sense to try, when I was trying to keep them as cheap as possible, we sort of first launched the Light one to go for off the shelf bridge and the cheaper tuners and stuff. But now I feel like most people who are buying the lights kind of up spec it. There's very few of them that are sort of being specced at the base level. So it kind of made more sense to offer a few of those things that people are picking most of the time as the standard spec instead, and just kind of unify the range a bit more.
I see. And then, yeah, you introduced the Light 2 series. That was after we last spoke. Mm. And I guess was that for a similar reason? Because the Light 2, dear listener, you might well guess, is the same as the Light, but with two pickups, right? That's the only change in the Light 2?
Yeah, that's basically it. And then, so on the Light ones, the jack socket's on the metal control plate next to the volume control, and on the 2s, it moves to the body edge, sort of telly style.
Ah, right. So do you move the tone control onto the body instead of being on the lower horn?
Yeah, that's it. So tone control moves onto the plate next to the volume, and then the pickup selector, the rotary pickup selector's on the horn.
Right. I see. Yes, of course, because you need a pickup selector now. Right. Yeah, that makes sense. But did you introduce the Light 2 because you found so many people were upgrading the Light 1?
Yeah, and asking for sort of dropped emails that, oh, I'd really like this, but with two pickups, and get enough of those, and you get the gist. That's what people want. So give the people what they want. So yeah, that's entirely the same as any of the good stuff that I do in terms of sort of design ideas or models, that kind of thing, is all entirely born out of sort of customer ideas, and you sort of notice the trends and the ones that seem to be pretty popular, try and build into sort of models or variations of models.
I see. Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess, on that note, there's, you occasionally make something weird. You make something that's like that's not one of the three body shapes, the JB, the Stellarosa, or the double standard. And they tend to be things that, like, complete custom builds for people where they've asked for something, you know, some weird, unusual shape. But there is a body shape that's appeared a couple of times now. And I don't know, is it something that you're going to be working towards?
Yeah, I think I'll work it up into a standalone sort of baritone model, because it first appeared as a baritone for Dustin Babitska. So I think on Instagram it's Watch This Button Do, yeah. Dustin, but man with 10 million guitars and all of the effects pedals in the world. I think he runs a studio and stuff. So he was an early customer. He bought a pink Stellarossa, one of the first Stellarossas. I don't know if you had it, Joe, for a while. I think you did, actually.
I did. I had the three pickup one for a bit.
Yeah, so he bought that. And then he came back sort of a couple of years later and commissioned this baritone, sort of based on a shape he'd had in his head that was kind of sort of wave influenced. So I drafted that up, sort of based on some just little snapshots of sketches that he'd sent over to me. And then just kind of went off the deep end with it.
So let's talk about that guitar. This is kind. It's a single cut, so it's your only single cut, but it's quite a modern single cut shape. It almost, the upper horn almost has an offset feel to it.
Yeah, it does. It looks to my eye, it's almost a little bit Manson-y, I'd say. It's that kind of sort of.
I can see that.
Yeah, so with a slightly more sort of bulbous sort of bit on the side that doesn't have the horn, so on the bass side. So I guess it's kind of sort of a bent Telecaster shape, but pretty far away from a Telecaster once you get to the end of it, and then quite wide on the hips as well, but a little bit more angular. And yeah, you're right, it's a more modern shape, I think, which is why on that one in particular, I've tried to sort of tone it down with the other stuff that's on there to push it back a bit more vintage or a bit more cataloguey, rather than sort of leaning into that. If people want to check it out and on the Instagram, if you scroll back down through the stuff on it, it's the one, it'll jump out, it's the one that's got the like inlaid like Japanese wave pattern on it in the on the top.
Yeah, of course, like a sort of a, is it a two-tone sunburst or is it just like a,
yeah, two things, three-tone sort of sunburst, what do I call it, blood orange burst or a harmony burst, right, something like that. So not quite a tobacco sunburst, but yeah, with that was a laminate top with sort of ash on the top and then steamed eucalyptus underneath, which is kind of the black, so, and then cut back down through the ash to expose the black wood underneath, which is what that pattern is, and then filled in the routing with clear resin and then painted over, and then bound it, and then painted over the top of it.
This guitar must have taken you as long as five of your normal ones.
This is the first time I've done any resin stuff as well, so I've got a newfound respect for like Tobias Casper and all the guys that do like Resin River and stuff like that, because me trying to do a tiny bit of resin work filling in this pattern was just the biggest fucking mess you've ever seen. The first time around, stuck the top to it to the table that it was on, because I didn't expect the resin to go like through the wood. It was just, yeah, it was horrific. It was good in the end, but it was a learning curve. I've actually got another one in the workshop at the moment, which has been much smoother.
another one? Are you calling this the DB?
I call it DB. Yeah, it's kind of for dusting and also sort of for decibels. It's a fit for the baritone. There's another one in the shop that's going to Germany, and that's got a different vibe. That's got some poison green in the wave pattern inlay over a black veneer. So it's definitely a bit more sort of a modern slash stoner vibe going on with that one.
And I think I saw that shape again turn up in like a vintage white with a,
yeah, that's right. So I was going to Angel, I'm going to get this wrong, it's either Angel or Angel, but went to the States and he's kind of modified that since then as well. So he kind of bought it and used it as a mod platform, and he stuck an extra pickup in the neck and sort of made his own metalwork stuff, which is ace, because that's kind of exactly what I had in mind for it, that it wasn't so expensive that you didn't want to mess with it, that you could sort of, because, and like you said, with that big pickup cavity, that was entirely the point of that. Not only does it make it easier for me to manufacture, but it makes it a lot easier for people to mod it after the fact as well, so you can chuck new pickups in it and stuff like that. That's what I want to see. That's what I do with guitars. So I'd hate to make stuff that was so inflexible that you felt like you couldn't do that to it, even though it's a custom guitar. So that's been really
unique.
Cool.
That's quite a unique USP, really, to Fidelity guitars, because you know, if you're going to buy a custom guitar, normally it would be just to be kept as it is, or you know, the custom guitar is going to be so weird and unusual and not the standard things that you're not going to be able to easily modify it. So
the premium stuff is more like that, like the deluxe Stellaros and stuff, where it would be a bit trickier to mod, or in the saying that they're all sort of P90 size routing and stuff, but they're not necessarily ones you'd want to start taking apart straight away, whereas the lights, like, it makes me happy if I see people messing around with them. It's kind of, that's what it's all about for me.
And I want to talk about the pickup that was in that white one, because it looked like a radiator.
Yeah, it's the dual foil, so it's the Mojo pickups one. He's been doing it for a few years now. There's a few variants of that pickup. I think that was the full size original dual foil, which is just absolutely massive. Like, it's only about a centimeter thick, but it's huge. So you can't, having it on its own as a bridge pickup, I quite sort of like, because it just you're not trying to wedge it in there with other stuff. But I think it's now got a gold foil P90 in the neck now that's been modded, but still. But yeah, that's a cool pick. I mean, he does it in a wide range style, size casing as well, and he's now started doing it in a regular humbucker size casing, which is smart because obviously you can drop it into a few more different things. But it's just it's two Tysco spec gold foils, single core gold foils wires in one pickup casing, effectively in the same way as a regular humbucker, but splittable as well. So it's basically a splittable gold foil humbucker.
Guitar Nerds are teaming up with Music Nomad, and I really think, nerds, you need to check out musicnomadcare.com. We've spoken about all their wonderful guitar maintenance products on the podcast, and I really can't emphasize how important it is to look after your gear and how easy Music Nomad make that for you with things like their how-to advice center and their setup hub. Music Nomad have been around for a little over 10 years, and in that time they've become one of the most recognized brands for guitar tech gear. They're available worldwide in every guitar store you can think to name, and it's for a good reason. All their products are professional grade quality. Every tool, and even the cases the tools come in, are designed for proper, rugged, on the road use. Make sure you check out what all the buzz is around Music Nomad, as they are redefining and raising the bar for equipment care. Learn more at musicnomadcare.com or follow them on social media with @musicnomadcare.
That's very cool. That sounds like something I should get and put in something, or just get and leave on the side and never actually
just admire. You can make a nice little stand for it.
Exactly. But coming that, back to the
that baritone's got the same pickups as well. So there's two of those. It was the wide range sized ones, which are a bit smaller in that baritone, and then a Tele neck pickup in the middle, as well, with a ton of switching. So both the humbuckers are splittable, and then the Tele neck pickups on a four-way rotary. So it's got a normal sort of Gibson toggle for neck and bridge and in between, and then you can introduce the middle pickup in four different ways. So you can either have just the middle pickup on its own, or mix it in series, mix it in with whatever's going on in parallel, or then not having it at all. So
it's pretty, that's so ridiculous, and on top of the weird resin finish and already this being a unique shape, and we haven't even talked about what's actually the weird bit about this guitar
so it's got so Neil at NRG Effects, who's down your way, Joe, I think he's along the coast in Eastbourne. And he's an amazing guy, and he's amazing. He was trained as a luthier, so he's probably technically a better luthier than me, but he's definitely a better electronics. So he makes pedals under NRG Effects most of the time, and he does the odd custom bit and bob as well. And Dustin has asked for some sort of controllable fuzz, so almost like a joystick controllable fuzz, but where the joystick looks like a trem arm. So I stupidly agreed, and then Neil was stupid enough to agree to work with me on it. So I came up with the mechanism. So I basically just broke a Jag trem, like a US Jag trem, and just stole the collet and the arm out of it, and then built that into a bar that had like a cog system on it. So like a toothed gear with a belt, which attached to a pot in the same way as a wah pedal. And so that pot in there was the one that controlled the parameters of the fuzz, and then sent it to Neil and was like, hey, work it out. So he managed to build this incredible, like, baritone voiced fuzz with controllable feedback, which is what the arm controls.
What it is. It
controls like the pitch of the self oscillator, or like the feedback loop, so you can sort of tune the drone notes on it with the arm. It's got a couple of other functions as well. Yeah, it's absolutely mad. And he managed to build all that onto a circuit the size sort of a large postage stamp somehow. And it sounded amazing. It's great. I think there's if you go to China Mike's channel, the CGS guitar channel, he's got a video on there from, I think it was last year's boutique guitar showcase that he did at his house, where he's messing around with that, and it sounds really good. I think Neil's got a little video on his YouTube channel as well.
I've watched it on loop. Do you think that's the maddest thing you've ever built?
It's properly out there, like every bit of it. It's not even like, can we have it with a stupid effect? Yes. Can we have it with the resin top? Yes. And a new shape? Yeah. Baritone. Okay. Yeah. It's just all of the ideas, but I'm just really happy how it turned out. It kind of worked. It didn't look too different to what I'd normally do.
I guess it's a lot of things to take a punt on, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And I guess the way I kind of approach it is that you say yes as often as you can, and then you work it out as you go along. Most of the time that works out. But sometimes it doesn't. You kind of have to go back a few steps and try it again. But then, like I said before, it's where all the good stuff comes from. Sort of the stuff that I would never think of to do on my own. So unless someone suggests that to you and you agree to it and you go for it, then you're never going to do that stuff. You kind of have to jump into it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I guess so. Now, the last time we saw each other was at the Birmingham Guitar Show, where you had a bit of a Stella Rosa stand.
Stella Rosa choking on some wine. Stella Rosa Fest. Yeah.
Yeah. and one of the guitars you brought along was in fact your very Stella Rosa one that you'd made for yourself, which was. Was that the first time you'd ever had a chance to make a guitar for yourself?
A couple of them, sort of in theory, were for myself, but in the knowledge that they were probably going to be sold. So there was a blue JB that Jackson tried out for a while that went, and then that first Stella Rosa Light one, the red one that you had for a while, that one I was kind of had my eye on because I thought there was a couple of bits that went sort of super tight around the edges of it. I thought, oh, I'll keep that. And then someone made me an offer on it and was really into it and, yeah, couldn't say no. So
it was very good. That red one was really good. Yeah. I know there were things that you noticed on it, but I really liked that guitar. I thought about making you an offer on that one as well.
Yeah, me too. I was really gutted. It wasn't even the prize. It was just that the guy was so enthusiastic about it that I thought it would be really mean to turn him down. So please, anyone listening, do not make an offer on this new one. I probably will cave. But but all along it's been like, this is definitely just one for me. Because I've not had a guitar here, not full-time, for the whole of lockdown, I think.
Really?
Nothing. Like, the more I build, the less I play, and the less time I have to play when I'm at home. So I tend to just play at the workshop, where there's always a few things sort of knocking about, and sort of guitars that are getting finished and setting them up and testing them out, and the odd sort of bits of repairs that come in and stuff. So that kind of keeps me satisfied, but it does mean I haven't done a lot of recording or anything the last couple of years. So it's been really nice to finally have one that's just going to stay here, that I can kind of fiddle around with stuff and use as a bit of a sort of test bed for ideas and as well. But mainly just so I've got something to actually write some music on for a change. It's been nice.
It's very simple and conventional. Considering some of the stuff you make, and to be honest, considering even the spec of a lot of your lights and things like that, you've been quite conservative with this model.
I think the way I play, which is the opposite word, is badly, but I'd like to keep the guitar as simple as possible. And I've started trying to force myself to play more with my fingers over the last few years and sort of get more dynamics out of the guitar that way and just not have any distractions on it. So no switching, barely any controls, just the volume and tone, and just try and sort of play the guitar rather than fiddling with it, and then do all of the nonsense on the pedal board instead. So I'm just a massive pedal junkie, and that's where the silliness comes in. I think in terms of guitar, I try and keep it, I'm playing quite simple stuff, and I just like to be able to focus on that and making the simple things I'm doing sound nice in terms of the way I'm playing them, and then mess about after that.
Sure. So you've gone for the Stella Rosa shape in kind of a honey burst.
I'd call that's kind of the blood orange burst, I'd call that. So it's kind of almost like Gretsch orange in the middle, and then oxblood on the sides, and then kind of blended. There is a third colour in there you wouldn't necessarily notice, but sort of a trans red as well, just to blend it a bit.
I see. And then like a lovely, thick sort of grandma's jewellery taupe guard on either side. So you've gone for the split guard, which is very cool. And then you've gone for the descendant vibrato. But you've gone for quite an interesting pickup, bang in the middle of the body.
Yeah, I think you and Jackson had a chat about this the other week on the show podcast. So it's a kind of a budget variation of the Charlie Christian that Market Mojo Pickups makes. So normally the one that I'd use in the Stella Rosses is a P90 size with sort of a nickel casing and then sort of a black insert with the blade magnet. And he also makes them in sort of the traditional black and white plastic trapezoid Charlie Christian shape and a few variations on that. But he's done one he's calling the Deco Sonic. So it's basically just it's really simple bobbin. I guess it's Bakelite or something similar, with six sort of chunky pole pieces and a bass plate, and that's kind of it. And it sounds very close to his regular Charlie Christian. It's a little bit more spanky, like a little bit more Fendery, I'd say, which is fine because that suits me. That's kind of what I'm like. But yeah, I think for the launch of it, he's sort of worked up where it's got sort of an Art Deco kind of drawing on the cover of it, but my one's just black, just all blacked out, and I really like it.
Yeah, I think I prefer aesthetically, you know, I think I prefer it to the other one. It's just, it's very simple, very sort of functional looking, and I kind of like that about it.
Yeah, me too. I like about it too, and I like the fact it looks like cheap materials as well. Like obviously it's the right materials for what it is. It's not to say it's badly made. It's just that those sort of old school wax coated kind of like hardboard or bobbins just, yeah, it really does it for me. I like the look of stuff like that. I think the one with the Art Deco drawing on it is mainly for, or was definitely requested by Waterslide Guitars over in the States, who make sort of really good sort of Fender style stuff with a lot of gold foils and again sort of taut and similar sort of aesthetics to what I like and what I do, but more, very much more sort of in the Fender camp, but with bits of Art Deco and stuff like that as well.
Very cool indeed. Now at the guitar show, at the Birmingham Guitar Show, did you have a chance to knock around the show a lot and see any other stands?
Yeah, a little bit. I had a wander around. What's jumped out? The Kisara that you guys were talking about was also my favourite guitar of the show.
It was the first time I'd seen them or even heard of them. I felt bad about that because I realised they actually have some...
Nerd.
I know. It was bad that they actually have... I was sort of like, oh, hey, you're new, are you? And it's like, oh, no, they actually have some A-list sort of guitar players who play them. It's like, oh, right, it's me that's an idiot. I felt bad because of that. But it was the first time I'd seen or heard of those guitars, and they were very, very cool indeed.
That's so good. They're so well made and beautiful. And yeah, he's a lovely guy. They're great. I chatted to him a couple of times previously, briefly, the first time I'd met him properly at the show. But I did a JB for Beatronics, for Felipe over at Beatronics. Pedal builder in Los Angeles, who's got a couple of guitars, but he when we were specking it up, he sent me a picture of one of the guitars that was like yellow with leopard taut, and he's like, I want it a bit like this. And when I finished it up, he was like, that's a big guitar, I best drop him a message. And he was really cool about it. It was fine. We're basically all magpies anyway, so you can't help it. These things sort of bleed into each other. But yeah, that was cool. But it was good to see them in the flesh. They're really, really pretty guitars.
Yeah, it was great. And it was, yeah, but right up my street, see something with, whatever it was, 17s. B2B. That was great.
Doesn't even need to be a baritone, does it? 17s on everything.
Exactly. That is the solution. But yeah, well, that was very good.
Dave at Ancoats Guitars. So it was nice to meet him. So I think he's only started in the last sort of 18 months, something like that. But again, just a lovely guy doing sort of the catalog style stuff with his own sort of twist on it. He's using a lot of, trying to keep things as local as possible. So I think he's using the paint manufacturer up in Manchester where he is, and Creamery pickups. So Jamie up in Manchester winding those for him. And just some really cool, like, new designs and really nice guitars. I think he's really early in it, so he's still kind of sort of feeling his way sort of into running the business, but he's doing some great stuff.
Yeah, it's really cool, really interesting. I love that even like each model is named after an area local to him and stuff, which is very cool. There's a lot of like character, I think, with those Ancoats. I think they've got, you know, they're going to be great. I think they're going to do loads of stuff. Do you think Do you think it's becoming a trend then, the sort of, as you put it, catalogue guitars? Do you think, are you seeing more and more companies come out that are doing kind of a similar thing to what you're doing?
Yeah, they're all mugging me off. It's clearly me that started it and no one else. I definitely didn't copy it. No, I think it's like Dennis Fano was kind of a big influence on me and the Novo stuff. And I think that the fact that he's managed to take that to a level where he's selling quite a lot of guitars and you see them in quite a lot of places. And it's obviously not just him. There's a lot of other people coming up around sort of the same sort of ideas. But I think that's bleeding in now into the people who are starting out, that it seems like there's more young luthiers starting out doing that style of guitar rather than doing the what I would have called the more traditional, particularly British style, where it's more about the woods and right. about the finish, sort of a high end finish. Maybe something sort of Patrick Egerly, which is not, that's not me sort of saying that's a bad thing. Like, he makes, well, he's just a massive inspiration in terms of what he's done with the business, but also just in terms of the beautiful guitars that he makes. They're not my style, but they're incredible. And I feel like that's what I always thought of as sort of small business sort of British luthiers coming up. And it seems to, there's been a bit sort of an American thing that's bled in. I definitely think it's more of that Castle kind of vibe coming through now.
That's such an interesting point. I've never thought about it, but you're so absolutely right. That sort of the British luthier is, it's like traditionally, it's kind of a weird, maybe like a very slender offset Les Paul with 500 different rare woods it's that Patrick Eggle thing, which
it's wood and it's gloss and it's very, very well made, but at risk of angering someone I admire very much, it's not necessarily that cool.
It's definitely a quite a dated thing. I think I've met and interviewed Patrick Eggle a few times, and he's a lovely fellow. I think he does some great stuff, but it's the same. That sort of thing's not quite for me. It's they're more in common with like a PRS, I guess, than sort of anything else. Yeah. It's that kind of vibe, which is fine. It's just not my kind of vibe. But that was historically everything. That was all UK custom shops.
Yeah.
And then I guess it is kind of recent. We're seeing the two ends of it, because we do still have like a whole bunch of like the ultra modern builders who aim for everything's headless and fan fretty, and then you of course get the builders that sell themselves on being super weird. So the ones that will use like resin or, I don't know, have wolves on them and things like that, you know, which are aiming at a very specific market.
Velociraptors, shout out to Stuart. Yeah.
Exactly.
Whose guitars are amazing as well, by the way.
But. Yeah, yeah, they are. They're fantastic. SPC make great guitars. There's one still on he lent me one just before lockdown and I still haven't given it back. I feel like a
long way to continue.
Yeah. Exactly. I've never really thought about that. But you're so right. The British luthier thing was a very particular thing for so long. And I guess it is a sort of bleeding in of the US's taste in that sort of cataloguey sort of 50s meets modern guitars that seems to be happening over here, certainly with you, with Ann Coates, with Katara, you know, I can't think of any others that are doing it at the moment. But
the other one that jumped out at me, the show was and he was a lovely guy as well, Remco Drubble, so Mr. Drubble Guitars. So he's in the Netherlands. I think he's near Amsterdam, but a similar kind of thing again, sort of a kind of an offset, sort of cataloguey ish kind of thing with relicking and that kind of thing. His guitars were really nice too. But again, it sort of falls into that boy Trent as well. So Trent Guitars, James's Home and Tone had a Model 1 on the stand, which was lovely.
Yeah, and in like a lovely started. Sort of lipstick pink. That was very
nice. No, it's a pretty one. He's using water-based paint, so it's a bit more environmentally friendly, and he's just started doing getting someone locally to him to make his own hardware as well, so his own plates and bridge plate and stuff, which is just sort of taking it to another level. So
that's really good.
Yeah, yeah, well-deserved sort of guitarist or guitar magazine award last year as well.
Yeah,
They're cool.
They're definitely, Trent guitars are definitely on my list of things that I will purchase that I haven't quite got round to yet because that list is long. But I will get there eventually. What about effects stuff or amps or other things at the show? Did anything? I'm putting you on the spot a little bit with that. So don't worry if there's nothing that you know.
No, it's fine. I'm contractually obliged to say Hampstead on both counts.
Well, I'm glad you did because I wanted to talk to you about Hampstead because Hampstead one of those brands that I'd never got to meet them. Even when we did an in-store at GAC, when I was the marketing manager at GAC, it was like we did an event with them and it fell on like an evening where I wasn't there. And you know, so I'd never met them until that guitar show. Now, I've never really got to try them out. They were always on the shop floor at GAC, but also when I was there, I was very... No, it just didn't care if it wasn't a Vox AC30. That was how I was for a couple of years at GAC. So I didn't try things out a lot because I was so cornered into that amplifier. And I kind of wish I'd given them more time. And recently I've been checking out their pedals and I was like, man, they do some great stuff.
The pedals are so good. I mean, the amps are ridiculously good. They're very high end. So the full fat ones, kind of the artists. I'd say they're kind of either the wealthy amateur or the professional amp, and they're kind of stage amps, I guess, or they're best as a stage amp. Like they're loud but super clear. Like you can hear everything through them, and really flexible as well. I've got attenuation built in and like switchable EQs and reverb, like amazing reverb, a really nice trem. So they just sound great. They're just, it's like a proper pro amp. Like if you're gonna get one, they do a combo, but like get it with a head and a whatever size cab you want, they'll make as well. And
really,
they just sound really good. They just did a collaboration with Mule resonators over in the States, and they had a Mule Caster. So like the steel bodied kind of sort of Fender style resonator, and they made a specially voiced head for that. Baritone voiced head.
That's very cool.
Yeah, and then did a limited run of 15s, so 15 inch speaker cabs to go with it as well, all in like black, but like a really nice kind of slightly shiny kind of black Tolex with black grills, and like all blacked out. And I painted all the control panels for them in, like, you know, the matte black paint you get on the inside of like bonnets, so like car engine paint effectively. So yeah, I had a bunch of those in the workshop, so they're on those amps. They're doing like a limited run of those to go with the Mule guitars that match it, so that's pretty cool.
How did I miss this? I am terrible at my job. This sounds like the coolest thing ever. And 15s?
Yeah, with the 15, it sounds absolutely massive. It's a huge sound. It's like, yeah, it was just every time you fired that up over the weekend at the show, it was like you get that kind of bass face on. You can't help it.
Yeah.
So that's cool. And I think we're chatting about doing a 5-watt at some point and do that as a collaboration with them, because they're only local and they're really nice guys. So yeah, we want to do something together at some point. So do like a more kind of vintage sort of 5-watt thing, but with a few of their, like Peter's thing is he just tries to improve all the circuits that he works on. He's talking about building in things like sort of DI outs and stuff like that to make it a good like sort of desktop recording amp, as well as being a cool like low wattage vintage amp. So
that's definitely the flavor of the month at the moment, but turning it into a desktop recording amp as well as being able to do everything else, that's what you want.
Yeah, but then to also be like to like look the part as well, and to just act like a really nice low watt valve amp with a cab when you need it to as well, kind of a dual thing. I think it's a long way down the to-do list by the sound of it, but that'd be cool to work on that at some point,
because they only do like a 20 watt and a 60 watt, right?
It's
standard, so yeah.
Yeah, and even the 20 light is what is loud. I think it's got they've got switchable voltage on switchable output on them, so you can switch it down to 5 watt. I think on the 20 you can go 20 or 5, and I think the 60 goes 60-25, so you can bring it down, but they're still very loud. that's good. that's what they're built for. Yeah. They're built to just like crank it out and not to like lose everything in the mush of doing that. Like they're super. The definition on them is like the amazing thing about them. They're just you can just hear exactly what the guitarist is doing, what the guitar is doing. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And then the pedals are really good as well. So they've got the signature Trem, which is one of the best sounding Trems I've ever heard. And then a range of different sort of boosts and
you overdrives. always have a pedal, a Hampstead pedal in every shot that you take on your floor when you take a shot of one of your Fidelities when you finish them. You always have a something plugged in.
They're pretty, and I like them, and they do me a discount. So. They're in. I got the loaded for bear cables as well, which are really pretty and just work and sound great as well. But they do those in loads of different colours too. So nice to have that stuff lying around. You kind of mix and match for photos and that, but also just really usable, cool stuff.
Yeah, they look great. And fantastically, they actually do a bass suited drive pedal. As well, yeah, with the subspace.
Yeah, so it's like a bass voiced version of the Odyssey, which was the sort of do it all Swiss Army knife drive pedal, which I think was sort of the first drive pedal that they put out. I think the Trem came before that. But they've also just done another one with some, like, I think they're doing a limited run. It's either out now or it's like coming out soon with some germanium, like some new old stock, like germanium in there as well, that sounded even better. I thought that might be the reaction.
Yeah, that sounds very cool. Yeah, I think I'm gonna have to get a subspace. What I really want is the Comet. They do a Comet, dear listener, which is it's just another drive pedal. They seem to do like three variants of the same drive with that basically have more or less controls.
I think that's my favorite one, like Comet. So that's the one that's in the dark green casing.
That's right.
And I think it came after the Odyssey, and it's. In theory, a simpler, sort of more kind of WYSIWYG intuitive like drive, but actually the circuit apparently is more complicated than the Odyssey.
Really?
But I really like it because it's sort of lower gain, but on the Odyssey, you can only kind of bottom out. You can't quite bottom out the gain control. You can always hear the clipping ever so slightly, even at sort of the minimum. So it's more for doing sort of slightly more driven tones, whereas the different circuit in the Comet means that when you turn the gain right down, it doesn't sound clippy at all. It just sounds like your clean tone, effectively.
I see. Very cool. Yeah, that I'm a fan of a drive pedal like that can maybe be just a touch more transparent. The Comet really looks like the ticket, to be honest. I bet it sounds great on bass anyway. And I've really enjoyed the guitar demos I've seen of it. So I might take a punt on the Comet instead of the Subspace.
Good one.
Just to do it. Get something different.
The Zenith as well, which is the boost and compressor, which again just sounds amazing. And it's got some mad switching built into it as well. So you can have like different, it looks like it should be pretty self-explanatory, but you can have quite lots of preset stuff in there and control it through switches in quite a lot of different ways. So that's kind of a sort of Swiss Army knife thing again. They're really good at sort of putting these small pedal packages together, but they do a lot when you really get into it.
Yeah, they've got kind of they remind me of like Jackson Audio in the sort of how I guess neat and modern and Swiss Army knife the pedals tend to be, and they're pricey, they're premium pedals that do a lot at a very high quality bar.
Definitely. And the thing is, it's a sort of small batch as well, I guess. It's like their workshop is maybe 10-15 miles sort of west from where I am in Cambridge, and it's on like an old farm. It's been converted into small units, and it's just Peter and his family, effectively, so his wife and sons, and then Brian Love, who is sort of is taken over from Tim as kind of the ears in the shop, and Tim's still involved. He's living out in Norway now, but it's just a small family-run business. They're doing all these pedals by hand, putting the components on the boards sort of one at a time. So it's that's where the sort of the money comes from, the time that goes into designing them, the time that goes into populating it all, just in a little shop in the middle of the Fens.
Very cool. Yeah, they look wicked.
We're on the amp topic. I should talk about the Greer that I've got recently as well, because that's
amazing. There was a little Greer amp on your on your booth, wasn't it? And I really intended to try and get to plug that in and give that a listen, but I didn't quite get a chance.
I kind of just brought it along as sort of eye candy for the stand, because obviously we're on a sort of shared Hampstead stand, so it's very cool just bringing other stuff in and hooking it up. But it's my sort of main thing in the workshop now. It's 5 watts. I think it's 1 EL84. And then I've switched out the preamp valve now on Nick's advice to a 5751, which makes it sort of a bit more, you got a bit more clean headroom in it. When it arrived, I think you had a 12 AX7 in there, and it just crunched. It's like all crunch all the time.
It's basically a fuzz pedal in amp form.
Yeah, exactly. But it was the best crunch you've ever heard. Like, right. It's like, oh, I'm just going to sell all my drive pedals. They all sound terrible in comparison to this. Like, it is the loudest thing in the world. Like, even with this new preamp valve, and it doesn't go above, you can't put it above 2, really.
Really?
Yeah, it's absolute monster. You can't go above 2. If you do go above 2, you'll get louder up to about 5, and then it starts to get more crunchy after that. But it's ace, and it's so tiny, you can just chuck it about, or just you could chuck it in your backpack, and like, I swear, it's loud enough that you could gig with it and have just about enough headroom to get away with it.
If you've not seen them, dear listener, they're basically like a wooden cube. You know, with the little Greer 5 watt, they're fantastic. You never see them over here.
No, he makes them sort of one at a time, sort of in his garage. I think he's in Portland now. So there's not many of them about. I think he's got a couple of dealers. I think Chicago Music Exchange in the States stock them. I think it's a few other places stock them, but they're just very small volume. I was very lucky that he liked the guitars, and we did kind of a swap. So I built a 2-pickup Stellarossa for him in sort of army green. It was a really cool one with like copper tape behind the celluloid binding. That was stupid ideas that I should say no to, that say yes to. It's like, attach copper as binding? And the answer is not to buy the copper the copper strips that you use to line your roof with and put under the tiles. That doesn't work. Anyone who's thinking about it, what does work is to go around and put on 10 layers of copper tape, which then compresses down to look like copper strip, and then put the celluloid binding over the top of it. So anyway, it was worth it. It was a nice touch. It looked really cool at the end. But anyway, yeah, so that he ordered that guitar, and in return got the amp from him, and it's worked out perfectly because it's amazing. It's kind of, I've never had a really, like, even though I've got the Tone King, even then it was like, yeah, it's good, it's a good amp, whereas this is like, oh, this is like a proper next level amp. Like, it was like taking cotton wool out your ears the first time turned it on. It's ace.
Wow. Yeah, it looked fantastic. I hope I get to hear it at some point. But that is all the time we've got for this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, dear listener. You can, of course, join us over on Patreon at patreon.com/guitarnerds for an entire extra episode every week. That's where me and Matt are headed now. You can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you get this episode ad-free and early. $5 gets you access to the Patreon special episodes and our back catalogue. And $10, you get the lot. Plus, I sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. Find us on all your favourite social media platforms. Join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to watch vintage British meat adverts. And get involved in our weekly discussion as well. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell! Fry and Tempest.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.